Hey, before we dive in, I just want to talk to you about something. You know, I hired an intern during this pandemic, and it was really hard to find a quality intern. I had to talk to a ton of different schools. I had to apply to all these different programs. Each school has a different program that you have to apply for. I had to interview a ton of candidates. It was really hard. And eventually I found a great intern. Shout out to Kaylee Ragland, who's been crushing it for me. But listen to me, ZipRecruiter makes this task a lot easier. First of all, they send your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites, which I didn't even know there were 100, but listen to me, this is all true. And they don't stop there. With the power of matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply for your job. ZipRecruiter makes hiring efficient and effective with features like screening questions to filter candidates and an all-in-one dashboard where you can review and rate your candidates. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. So listen to me, if you're looking to hire someone in this hard time, don't waste your time recruiting people. Go to ZipRecruiter.com and get the job done there. Okay, I'm done talking. I've talked long enough. Let's dive in. Here we go. Episode 37, Teddy Robb. Here we go. He's got a brand new song out on country radio right now, Heaven on Dirt. You gotta check this song out. This is that kind of country song that's like you're driving down the highway, pickup truck, windows down, wind blowing in your hair, dog sticking his face out the window. This is that kind of country song. You know what I'm talking about. And listen to me, Teddy's story about how he came up in the industry. This is an interesting story. I learned about it on this call. And this is not like your traditional country story, Nashville star story. This guy spent like a year in Colorado perfecting his craft. I mean, this dude is as country as it comes, and he's doing things his way, the Teddy Robb way. So look, I don't want to give too much of this away. Let's just dive in. This is a great conversation. I'm glad we were able to make it happen. Here we go. Episode 37, Teddy Robb. Let's dive in. Teddy.
Hey.
How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic. Look at this place you got here. This is unbelievable.
Oh, thank you. It's, you know, we've done so many, you know, like I pretty much did my radio tour this year from this spot. So just wanted to get a few things up there that represent me. You know, I got Fish and Velvet Elvis, Glenn Campbell, John Prine, a few things.
How great is that? I love this this throw over you've got on the couch over here.
I know, man. I don't even know where I got this, but I'm glad I have it.
Let me see that telly, by the way. Is that a telly right there?
Yeah, this is a T-52, man, a Nash guitar.
Look at that. That thing's gorgeous.
I actually woke up the other day feeling like I've really had this in my hands a lot lately, which was a good feeling. So this has kind of been my little workstation that I write from right here. I've done a lot from this spot in the, over the last, you know, 4 or 5 months.
Are you more of an, like when you're sitting down to pick out a tune, maybe write a little something, play a little something, or will you pick up an electric guitar, or are you more of an acoustic guy?
Well,
it's got them both right there. Look at this.
As well. So it's, you know, a lot of times in the mornings lately, I've been shedding on the electric more than acoustic, but when I'm writing, it usually makes more sense to play acoustic, or if I'm doing any of the other stuff, I'm doing a lot on acoustic. But my dream was to be an electric guitar player. My voice was just, it was always easier for me to get that going. So I put 100 times more effort into guitar than I do vocals, but that's just what I, you know, my voice is kind of what has gotten me here. So
I always joke that if people saw how much time I actually spent playing the guitar, trying to become a good guitar player, they would, however good they think I am, they would think I was 10 times worse if they saw how much time I actually spent on it.
I think that's the beauty of it for me. It's something that I've just put hours and hours and hours, and there's still so much to learn, and there's a lot of rooms I wouldn't even call myself a guitar player in. So
who do you like when you're trying to learn something on guitar? Do you play along to a record? Are there certain guys you really like that you try to emulate? Like what do you try to do when you try to get better on the instrument?
Man, kind of a cool thing that's happened for me is Derek Wells plays almost all the solos and electric parts on my records. And that was kind of a, you know, like to get like nailing all his solos that he's played on my songs has been a really good tool. I'm like, I'm kind of learning how, not that I can play like Derek, but I'm learning what he kind of does through learning the solos on my record. And then, you know, beyond that, I go to like, you know, Joe Walsh and, you know, anything that's the Eagles. I love sitting down and learning that stuff.
Eagles records, you can always pull stuff out of. You can sit down and you can always find a lick or something that you've never pulled before, even on songs you've played a million times. So how does this work when you go into the studio with someone like Derek Wells? Like, does he just rip something and it's basically good the first time? Or do you say, like, do you kind of coach him a little bit? Or like how, like when he's laying down a solo, how's that process work?
Well, the first thing I always think with those guys is to just let them run, let them do their thing. And it's probably going to be cooler than anything I could tell them to do. And, you know, in the words of Tony Brown, sometimes I'll just say, hey, play something I like. And they'll do it. You know, it's like, play me something I'm going to like. And then they'll throw something out that just kind of blows my mind.
And do you coach them past that? Like they do a first take and you tell them, hey, can we do, or do they usually just absolutely nail it?
Man, I had a thing that I was teaching Ilya play, who's up for one of the guitar players of the year. So Ilya and Derek are both incredible and they play on my stuff. And I was teaching him how to do a guitar part that I wanted on one of my songs, which it was just unbelievable to see this thing that I've worked on for hours and hours and hours to try and learn how to play and so that I can do it. And then I showed it to him and within 2 minutes, he's playing it, but playing it way better than I could play it.
So you heard this part like in your head, like you said, wow, it would be cool if this part was on. You sat down and you really tried to figure out what this part was. Yep. And he picks it up in 2 minutes and goes, great, done.
Perfect. Yeah. That's how good those guys are. They're the best of the best, man.
Unbelievable. Okay. So I'm really fascinated by this year of your life that you spent in Colorado. I mean, you talk about this a lot, but here's why I'm kind of fascinated about this. When I moved to Nashville, you couldn't claw me away from this city. I was afraid to go home for a weekend to visit my family because I was going to have FOMO. I still feel that way. Even in a pandemic sometimes, I was gone for 6 months. And I couldn't wait to come back, even though everything was shut down. You could not call me away from this place. You're here for a year, which in the lifespan of an artist is relatively not that long. And you decide you're going to leave Nashville and go to Colorado for a year. I mean, you had no feelings of FOMO. No, like, your friends weren't going to get ahead. You were like, this is cool. I'm going to Colorado for a year.
Man, I definitely had those moments where I just knew every moment that I could be in Nashville was useful. But so when I was here for the first year, I played on Broadway. So I was playing at, you know, Rippies and Tootsies and Honky Tonk Central and, you know, and then eventually kind of all up and down that street. And I knew I didn't want to do that forever. So, you know, while I was trying to build relationships to break into Music Row, you know, I was down on that street every day. And I told myself, I'm like, if I'm not off here in a year, I'm going to just do something completely, you know, I'm different. Like I kind of gave myself 1 year to learn how to get on stage, hold a crowd for 4 hours, because that's kind of what they're having to do down there. And if you lose the crowd, there's 50 other bars that they can go to. So I'd been down there just about a year when the opportunity to move out to Colorado came. And I was just young enough and dumb enough to do it. And so I moved out there just on a whim, knowing that I'm like, you know what? I did Broadway for a year and I didn't have anything going on Music Row. Like I didn't go to Belmont. I didn't know anyone when I moved to town. And, you know, I had no connections to a record label. Like getting a meeting with a record label at that time seemed impossible. Like I just didn't have any clue how I could, you know, meet a guy like Shane or, you know, whoever that head of a label is. And so I just, you know, I felt like I had nothing to lose. I moved out to Colorado And I started meeting a really cool group of people when I was out there, just different people coming through town. And, you know, I had one of those moments that I'll look back and it was such a green light. I just finished reading Matthew McConaughey's book and it's all about green lights. So I had a moment in Pepe's in Vail, Colorado, where I gave up my table to a group of guys who eventually bought me a beer, who one of them happened to be the CMO of the Grammy Awards. And this was when I was in Colorado. And I threw some demos his way through an email. And he goes, I don't know what I can do for you, but maybe I can help connect you. He connected me back to Nashville, where I eventually met a producer named Ben Fowler, who set me up my meeting with Monument Records. So, I mean, yeah, it seemed crazy to go out there and leave Nashville, especially because I do get that feeling of like, and one of the things I've had to learn through the pandemic is that I need to spend more time with my family. And if I miss a show or if I miss a night in Nashville, everything's going to be okay. I've learned that this year, and I'm definitely going to spend more time at home and all that. But had I not gone to Colorado, I don't know what would have happened.
Does that, because I know you're a big George Strait fan, right? I've heard you say the Troubadour had a big impact on you, that song. And I don't know what it is about George Strait because it's Texas country, but George Strait to me, it feels like Colorado in a song. I don't know what that is, but there's something about a George Strait song that reminds me of Colorado. And you're out, I mean, I don't know if a Colorado sound is a thing, but does that come out in your music? You've lived a year in Colorado. Do you ever think about being a hat act?
A what?
A hat act, like a classic, like a Tim McGraw, George Strait hat act. Like you're the Colorado guy.
Man, I love putting a cowboy hat on occasion. That's been kind of a new thing that I threw one on, and man, they're kind of addicting. You put a cowboy hat on and it's like, you just turn into, it's like a whole persona, but I haven't thought about it too much just cause I don't wear hats all that much, but man, yeah. When I heard Troubadour, I think I was like 20 years old and I wasn't doing music. That song just stuck with me so much, and it felt like it was telling me something. So yeah, getting him to go live in Colorado, you know, I don't know what it is about George either, but he just has that voice that I've studied him so much, and it's like, he's not the rangiest singer. He can't, you know, do everything on the spectrum like maybe a guy like Chris Stapleton can, who's amazing in his own right. But like George, I was always drawn to his tone. And that's what I'm trying to figure out. It's still an everyday pursuit of trying to figure out how to sing great in the spots that I'm comfortable in.
Yeah, he's the master of that. Yeah. And when you're playing in Vail at this bar, are you making good tips? I mean.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. What's a good tip on a Friday night? Like what was the biggest tip you ever got from an individual?
Man, I'll tell you this. So I came to Nashville and I learned how to hustle. So playing on Broadway, that's the whole deal, is you learn how to get tips. And a good night on Broadway is like, back in the day at least, I was happy if I made like $200 or more. So like I would be pretty pumped. And so I took kind of that same energy, took it out to Vail, where if you've ever been to Vail, there are some wealthy people out there.
I know. That's why I'm asking about the tipping situation.
So I started hustling them out there. So we would play from 5 to 9. And then from 9 to 10 was our chance to say, we're done. The resort is done paying us. But if you guys want us to keep playing, it's, you know, going to come out of their pockets, basically. Man, in that last hour, it would be almost $100 every single song. Like, we'd walk out of there. If I didn't make a grand, I was, like, kind of bummed.
Are you serious? That's what we're talking about. Friday night, in that last hour, you're pulling in a grand.
Yeah, it was a secret little spot, man. I had a blast living in Colorado. And, you know, it was one of the harder decisions I had to make to leave there because I was having so much fun. I was hiking every day in the summer. In the winter, I had almost 100 days on my snowboard the winter I was there. I was camping. I had a GMC 1500 Sierra that I would throw a mattress in the back and go, you know, camp out under the stars in the wilderness. It was the dream for me, other than I just had something tugging at my heart that I needed to get back to Nashville and really go after it. I always felt like that was a moment in time that I'll forever be changed from. And, you know, that's what that was. I wasn't meant to stay there forever. Unless I can buy a house there someday, then I would go back.
I think it's in the cards. Are you a good snowboarder?
You know, when I was out there at about 50 days on the mountain, and I grew up snowboarding, there was something that started happening at about my 50th day where I started feeling like I could attack anything. Switch, regular. I was dropping pretty decent sized cliffs. I was feeling really confident on my board. I've torn my ACL since then. I've, you know, gotten a little older since then, a little wiser. I just like to keep it nice and easy, find some powder, and that's about it these days.
That's it. You cruise. You know, my family is a big ski family. My dad is over 60 years old, and he is a ridiculous skier, and he kicks all of our asses. And it freaks me out because I get very nervous about my hands that I'm going to break a hand or something, and he just goes. He just flies. Something about being the old wise one on the mountain who's the best skier or snowboarder.
Yeah, that's so, my dad. He's incredible skier, so I have to keep up with him all the time.
I know it's the old guys that keep pushing us, right? What is that? That's not how it's supposed to go. So I've heard the story that Shane McAnally surprised you at Douglas Corner one night with a record deal, right, for Monument Records. I mean, look, these are power players in the industry, but that's a lot of pressure to say yes right there. You're on stage, power player in the industry offers you a record deal. I mean, what was that moment like? Did you say yes right there? I mean, fill me in. What was happening this night?
There was not even 1 ounce of in my whole body that had the thought of saying no. It was a yes right there. And you know, that's been a, you know, a really cool kind of transition of going from guys like Shane, who, you know, Shane's a hero of mine, like his songwriting and, you know, just his force in this town, what he's been able to accomplish. That's a guy I look up to. He's a hero. You almost get nervous around somebody with that much gravity, but then you have to transition from, okay, you know, here's a hero of mine, but now we got to go get to work. We got to make records. We got to, you know, we got to be successful. So I still go through that transition because it's like, it really is. It's like being, you know, you're around a celebrity. He's incredible, but you know, I've got some things of my own that I'd like to accomplish as well. And I'm certainly glad to have him a part of my team.
Why is he so good? Like for someone who's on the other side, you know, what does he bring to the table? Why does everyone love him so much?
I think he brings the best of people out. So, you know, there's certain people you get in a room with, and I mean, his talent just itself is incredible, but when also he can pull the best out of artists, I think that's what, you know, maybe his gift is being able to find an artist. And then, you know, even the more time he spends around him, I think the better he gets at it. But even with the, you know, small amount of time we've spent, I always can tell he's got a pretty good handle on what he sees I'm trying to accomplish, and he's able to pull that out of you.
I've heard artists say that he makes a very comfortable environment to kind of open up around and be honest around. No judgment, very, very comfortable, right? Is that...
From the very first meeting I had with him, it was like, you know, immediately he already made me feel like I was important and loved. And, you know, it was like the nerves kind of could go away at that point. He lets that, you know, he pushed that to the side.
So when you sign your record deal, do you kind of immediately feel, for lack of a better word, your status in the town? Does it kind of go up a little bit? Are certain people talking to you now at you know, at the bars that weren't talking to you before? Do you feel your star rising from signing that deal? All of a sudden, certain writers are your friend because they want to get cuts. Like, how does that work? Is it easier to date? Like, what's happening here?
Well, I have so much I want to accomplish. You know, I still feel like I'm... there's so much I want to go do. I don't really even focus on that much. I try to be nice to everyone I can, from the people that I, you know, first played with when I was here to, you know, up. And I think the trick is finding a group of people that aren't so far out of reach that, you know, like, you know, maybe Tim McGraw isn't. He's so far out of reach. Like, that's not really going to be my squad. It's guys that I've kind of been in the trenches with that we're all kind of like, and that can be any level. Some people who maybe some would say are behind me in my career and some ahead, but keeping it within range and finding your squad. And I mean, yeah, you have to find, or you have to find a balance, because you can't keep up with everybody that hits you up and wants to write. It just, and that's tough sometimes to be like, I just don't have time right now. But for the most part, that's what having a publishing deal does for you. It's like, they kind of book all my rights.
They play the gatekeeper. If you don't want to write with someone, you just say, hey, take it out of my publisher, and they'll politely turn them down.
Yeah. So, you know, but as far as like my status goes, I don't know. I'm still just me, and I'm, the second I start thinking I'm something because of what I have, I probably shouldn't be here anymore, man. It's like, I would get crushed all of a sudden by it, sitting next to Keith Urban playing guitar, or singing next to Chris Stapleton. I would be like, all right, I'm not all that, you know, much. I'm gonna keep my head down and grind, yeah, kind of guy.
But do your friends where you grew up in Ohio, do they go, holy crap, Teddy Robb is blowing up? Like, are they freaking out about this? Like, it's a little easier to impress the hometown friends, right? Like, they see record deal, that's huge, that's unbelievable.
I wish I could say that they, you know, are a little nicer to me now, but they're not at all. I think, in fact, they give me more shit these days than before. I know deep down they're so proud, and I've got an awesome community, but I would say what probably impresses them more is when I come home, and every time I've ever come home, it's like, I put so much work in on songwriting and singing and playing guitar. They got to see me when, you know, 10 years ago, when I was just picking it up and going, hey, what do you think of this? And it didn't sound very good. So I think that's been, if there's one thing that maybe I've been able to impress them this much on, it's just that they've seen me kind of grind through all these phases of learning how to become a great singer and guitar player.
I mean, that's gotta be really validating, because I remember being the musician kid where I grew up, and people thought there was no way I was gonna actually take that seriously. And then here you are, you're taking this very seriously, and you've kind of proven to break through to a certain point. That's gotta feel really validating, right? Like, is there anyone that, like, you know, right? How does that feel?
It definitely, that's felt good. And it's just felt good because, and I've always said this, it's like, whether the deals were coming or not, and even once you have the deals, there's new goals, there's always a new standard. But man, anytime I've ever been frustrated, I'm always just like, well, I'm just going to keep getting better. And there will come a day where if I spend, you know, maybe it's 10,000 hours, maybe it's 20,000 hours, but there will come a time where I just, you know, I believe you won't be able to be ignored anymore. I just think that's the whole thing of it all. It's just keep grinding. When things aren't going your way, maybe you just need to work a little harder, improve your voice, improve your singing, your playing, your songwriting, just keep at it. And I see those doors start to open. That's really validating that the work I'm putting in is paying off.
And does your family freak out? I know you have a little brother, right? I mean, do they freak out, or are they like, Tay's doing his thing, whatever?
I think they're really proud. Yeah, I think my family's super proud. But they all pretty much treat me the same.
Have there been any moments that you've been able to do with your family because you're now in the industry, like maybe take them to a concert backstage or something, anything cool that's come out of this that, you know, that you were able to do for your mom, introduce her to your favorite artist or whatever it is, anything special?
You know, yeah, introduce them to some artists and things like that maybe, but I think those moments are going to come once this pandemic kind of lets up a bit. There's going to be some really cool things that maybe I'll be able to do for them. But man, things started happening fast. 2019, I was on radio tour, and man, there wasn't a lot of time for family while I was on radio tour as much as, I got to, we did the Today Show. So they got to meet like Hoda and Jenna. That was
You brought them to the Today Show. That's an early wake up call, right? That's like,
That, and that happened early. That was, I think we, you know, that was a great job by my publicist, Casey, to get us that and to have that early. And, you know, November 2019, go back, I'm playing the Today Show. And I got to introduce my parents to Hoda and Jenna. I think that was a very...
That's a big moment.
For them, yeah.
That's like, this is the real deal. This is happening here, okay? This is, yeah. So, okay, this song, Really Shouldn't Drink About You. How do you get pitched the song? How do you hear the song for the first time?
I heard Really Shouldn't Drink Around You from Shane. It's a song him, Trevor Rosen, and Josh Osborne wrote that I think they just always really believed in. And it just, some great songs slipped through the cracks. And, you know, I want to be an artist that, you know, I write almost every day, written hundreds of songs. But when the head of your label comes to you with a great song and believes in it, you know, I
that's a lot of pressure to cut the song when the head of the label brings you the song that he's a writer on. It's a lot of pressure to cut that, to at least like the song, right?
Yeah, and if I didn't like it, I would have told him, you know, hey, this just isn't for me, and I've done that. But I heard Gin and Platonic, and I was like, that's pretty fun. And at the time, I was, man, that first EP, I was going through kind of a breakup slash just a confusing relationship. And so I kind of wanted that piece in there that was a fun version of it, because I had like Tell Me How and Lead Me On and Me On You and these songs that were like, there was tension in every one, and then Really Shouldn't Drink Around You was like the fun version of that, of all those put together. And when I heard that, I was like, okay, you know, that's like the beauty of Shane, is he gets it. He saw what I was trying to put together and saw an opportunity for a song like that.
I love that line, Jim Platonic. How good is that? And then, okay, so the single that's going to radio right now, Heaven on Dirt, this is a really fun song. And this, I feel like this kind of has some of that Colorado feeling to it. Again, I don't know what that is, but I feel a little Colorado vibe in this. How does the song come across your table? I mean, some of your friends wrote this, right? Do they send it to you, or how do you hear this song?
So this song was on hold with Jake Owen, and then it was also on hold with Blake Shelton. And then I heard this song. And
it was already on hold by the time you heard it.
Yeah.
And you thought this was unattainable.
Yes. And then we went and were able to get it back because we wanted to single it. And the writers were on board. Thank God they believed in me to cut it. And here we are, you know, at radio with it, and it's just doing amazing things right now.
And have you like had any, I mean, it's a little harder in quarantine because we're not out and about, but have you had any moments where you've heard this thing on the radio, or has anyone else heard it and like texted you in the car?
I bet I've heard it 15 times on the radio. Yeah,
where do you hear it? Where do you hear it?
In my car. I've heard it in different towns and just driving to the park in Nashville. I mean, I've got to the point where it's like I hang up the phone and you know, it'll just be on. So I'm like almost starting to be like, I think I'm going to hear it today or whatever. But yeah, it's just been, I mean, that's, I can't even explain it. As you can tell, I don't have words for that.
How many days do you spend in the studio recording this song? Is it quick? Do you get it done quick? You got the best players, and then you hop in, you sing the vocal, and you're done?
So we record Heaven on Dirt March 12th, I think, in the studio. It was like the day before they all shut down. I FaceTimed into it.
This is the day before it shut down. So this is pretty early.
This is like everybody's going, coronavirus is here. And everybody's freaking out. But we have this song and we're like, how fast can we get in the studio? So we get in. I don't even go. I'm FaceTiming in while they're... recording it gets done, recorded you know, at the studio. And then I had a small group of people that I stayed in touch with through everything, like maybe my manager and a producer and, you know, one or two other people, and that was it for at least a month. But during that time, I went over to my producer's house, sang the vocal on it, just cut it like we would any other song. The only difference was is that I wasn't there the day we recorded it.
So when you FaceTime in, are you on FaceTime for the entire session? Are you, someone prop you up in the control room, or where do you go? You're in the control room listening in?
Yeah, I'm just in the control room listening. I mean, I remember being in there when Ilya played the bomb, 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 ba-dum-dum. And I got to see it from, you know, from my computer, everyone lighting up over that. And, you know, I got to be a part of it just in a 2020 kind of way.
And then you sing the vocal at your producer's house, and do you just get up? What does that look like to do a vocal for the song? Does it come out pretty quick?
You know, some days there's magic and some days there's not when you go in to cut a vocal. This one, I think I took a few swings at it, maybe a day or so. And then,
do you have like a time of day that you think your voice sounds best? Like, do you like to sing in the morning or the evening?
It usually opens up a little bit more in the afternoon if I got to sing high, which that, you know, that chorus is pretty, the range of the song is pretty big. So I'm sure I cut it in the evening.
Sometime in the evening, the song is getting cut. This is an evening song. This is supposed to be played at a bar in Colorado. This is a great song. This is a real, because I was trying to listen, I was listening to everything, and this is like, this feels good. This has got an open range, I'm out in the range kind of feeling. This is a good song. So you went to Kent State, is that true?
I graduated from Kent State, yeah.
Graduated from Kent State. The only thing I know about Kent State is the Four Dead in Ohio. That's like the big historical thing about Kent State, of course. Did they ever talk about that when you were there? Do you ever take a class on that? Does anyone mention it? Is that ever mentioned there? What's the vibe?
Man, we talked about it a little, but not much. You know, I that's not the first thing I think of when I think of Kent State, but a lot of people it is. And I'm actually impressed that you know that about that, because there's a lot of people that don't even know that. But man, I had some teachers that were really influential on telling me to go chase my dreams. I started playing guitar and singing in college. And like before class would start, I'd be in a business class and I would have a teacher who would say, "All right, Teddy, come up and sing a song before we get started today." And so I would. And
that really?
Those were some of the first audiences I was playing for. So
the Kent State College, the students.
Yeah. Yep. So I would sit in class and sing a song, and then we'd, you know, we'd watch. And then I had a teacher who was like, "So, you know, we did a kind of a, what are you going to be? And, you know, when you grow up, take money, take everything out of it. Just wildest dreams. What would you be?" And I told one of my teachers that I was going to be a songwriter in Nashville. And I had no business saying that at the time, but he's like, "Have you ever played music in public?" I was like, "No." And but he knew I'd been playing in his class and whatever. He saw me carrying my guitar around. I just started carrying it everywhere. And
because you just, every moment you would want to play it, or because you identified with that, right? It felt cool to carry that guitar around. I mean, I carried a guitar everywhere with me. I mean, is that, you're just bringing it everywhere?
It was everything I could do to graduate college, because all I wanted to do was sit down and play guitar. And so I started taking it to school with me. I started even taking classes while I was finishing my business degree. I was taking piano and guitar and voice lessons. And but that teacher, he goes, "Well, why don't you go do an open mic and see if you actually like it?" So I did. Went and did just like a little Wednesday night open mic where you go and sing three songs. And man, it just set my soul on fire. I couldn't get enough of that. Like, I was looking up, next thing I was looking up every open mic I can go to. And that turned into a paid gig, which, you know, turned into weekends, which led me to wanting to go to Nashville.
Teacher, who is this guy? Do you keep in touch with this guy?
Man, I had this guy's name was Greg Blundell. He's from South Africa. And when I got my record deal, I think that was maybe the last time I talked to him, but I called him and let him know, "Hey man, I'm signing a record deal. I'm doing it." And he was really proud. I have a lot of this to thank to Kent State. They were, the teachers, the way that they just encouraged me to follow my dreams when I was, you know, just a kid from Akron trying to get a business degree at the time, it seemed, you know, just something impossible.
Were you kind of the cool guy with the guitar trying to do this music? And I mean, I went to music school, so person with a guitar was the last person you wanted to talk to, but you were kind of like, were you the cool guy with the guitar? Were you like standing out at parties playing guitar? Like what's going on here?
I don't know if I was the cool guy with the guitar. I wouldn't say that. I was the guy that wanted to be the cool guy with the guitar, maybe, but I definitely wasn't. And it's funny because everybody's like, oh, you pick up a guitar to be able to get the girls. And what I realized pretty quickly was like,
It doesn't work that well.
You have to be so good for that to happen. I'm like, oh, I cannot try this anymore. This isn't working. So it just became all about the love of music and the pursuit of that because, that's a myth. But in the beginning, you can get the girls with the guitar.
It is a myth. Why? That was so hard to swallow when that.
I didn't like it either.
That's not, in fact, it doesn't work at all. It's a repellent, if anything.
I know, they're like, oh, he doesn't have it together. I think that's what they thought.
That's what, very, very depressing. If you could cut a George Strait song and make your own, what's the song you're going to cut? Is the Troubadour the song?
Man, that it could be I Ain't Her Cowboy Anymore. Man, I love that song. I'd love to have a fun one. They call me the fireman. That would be pretty cool. Run would be an awesome one. Amarillo by Morning. Gosh. Check yes or no. I mean, I would just want to do them all. Like if I could do a record of all like George Strait hits, maybe we'll pitch that to my label. That'd be kind of cool.
Look, I think that's a good idea. A Teddy Rob George Strait record. Have you ever had any kind of interaction with him, or have you ever like even been in a room with him?
No. Nope. I got some songs that I'd like him to sing on someday.
That's hearing his song on a record is pretty mind-blowing. If you ever do, like, I can't even imagine what that's like for the people that get their songs cut by George Strait. That's got to be out of control.
Yeah, that'd be a dream come true. But I just would love to meet him and be around him for a second. Here's some kid. He has no idea who I am, but he's played a really big part in me dreaming about doing this and everything. So thanks, George.
How cool is that? Have you been doing any fishing lately? Any hunting? I know you're a big hunter fisher.
No, I haven't. I haven't been doing any fishing, unfortunately. I mean, maybe the last time was, when I was home not too long ago, so little when I went home. But man, I've been hiking. I've been at the park.
Where do you go to hike around Nashville? Where are the good hiking spots?
I just think go to the Percy Warner Stairs. That's a great place to start. Have you ever been there?
I've been around that area. What are the stairs? Is that a place?
And they just redid them. They're gorgeous. It's like if you do a lap of them 7 times, you can get 1,000 vertical feet. So I do that a lot. But man, with that, you can go up the stairs and then hit all kinds of different trails. Anything from a 2-mile trail to up to 11 and anything in between, you can just kind of find it. And so, man, we've had some amazing weather in Nashville this year, and I've been at the park almost every day. I've been spending a lot of time doing that and being outside. I think I've been outside more this year than ever, but no hunting or fishing. I go on a fishing trip up to Canada every year. That's like, that's my thing is going for walleye and
pike. Did you go this year?
Border was closed, man. So
couldn't go, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. I just think that means I got to go twice next year or three.
You got to go twice next year. Bring some writers. Turn into a work trip.
Oh yeah.
Turn into a retreat. Teddy, what's been unsaid? Have we said it all? What's been unsaid here? What have we left out? Fishing, Percy Warner, you got to climb the steps. Are you going to play guitar later today? Is that what's going to happen? Do you just sit around practice working on songs?
Man, I've got a round this evening.
Where are you playing? Know.
I'm playing to the listening room.
The listening room. Okay, yeah.
Man, I just think it, and I've been saying this over and over, I'm just really saying it that I'm ready for live music to come back, but I don't want to wish this time away. I've gotten myself into some habits that have been incredible for me. I think it's really important before you let the world into your day in the morning. Have that time to, you know, whatever your own meditation is. Mine is having a cup of coffee and playing guitar for 30, 45 minutes. So I've started that habit and reading and, you know, having that morning time. And then in the evening, kind of doing the same thing. That's been my pursuit through this whole thing is like, all right, I want to take some time and work on myself personally and not just career. And that's what I've been doing. I would encourage a lot of people to find that time in the morning before you turn your phone on, before you let the social media get into your day, have some time with yourself. I think that's really, really important. And it's been something that, you know, for me has helped me get through this. And I'm actually at a point where I'm enjoying my days more and more every day.
What do you read? What do you like to read?
Man, the last book that I just read that's on my mind is, it's green, called Green Lights by Matthew McConaughey.
Great book.
I laughed, I cried, the whole thing. It's just, and I listened to it on audiobook because Matthew's reading it to me. So basically Matthew McConaughey's been reading me to sleep lately. It's, you know.
By the way, some of those stories he tells about his father and his parents in the early days of when he was growing up, some of those stories are absolutely mind-blowing.
Unreal. Like it's you can see why he's such a great actor, because he was getting trained to be an actor from the time he was a little kid. I love it's the one about home that his mom made him plagiarize, and she's like, do you believe it?
It's and his parents, because his dad, if he ever said he couldn't do something, or if he ever said I can't do this, his dad would beat the crap out of him physically. Yeah. Right. I mean, that is that was blowing my mind. Okay. Yeah. That, do you read a lot of, like, do you like to read like biographies or autobiographies of people? Is that
That's kind of my thing with artists too, is like, I'll find an artist like George and just spend 2 months learning nothing but their stuff and trying to figure out what makes them work. And so I've always kind of done that with different like heroes of mine, and want to find out everything I can. And you know, that's been another thing about this time, is being able to zoom in on songs and, you know, find a song I love, learn it, learn who produced it, learn the tempos, the keys, the why they wrote the lyric, everything about one thing. And that's been a really cool thing about this year, is everything slowed down enough to do that.
Absolutely. Okay, Teddy Robb at the Listening Room tonight. Who's on the bill? Who are you playing with?
I'm playing with Chuck Wicks. He's hosting it, and Cameron Marlowe, and
Is this the first time you've played in front of people in a minute, or have you done a couple of these?
I've just done a couple listening rooms. That's about it, and I'm all for it, man. It's
are you pumped for this? Are you can't wait to get out and play songs for 12 people, or you know, 50, 100 people?
I'm going to get a shot of a drug tonight for sure, man. I live to perform.
This is a big deal. This is, are you going to spend the day getting ready for this mentally? Like, this is because if you got a show tonight, you can't be too exhausted. You can't do too much mental work, right? You've got to get zoned up to play tonight, right? Are you going to kind of just mentally get in the zone for the next couple hours, or like, what are you going to do leading up to this?
I'm probably going to go get a workout in. And I've already this morning got what I want to play and stuff ready. That's, man, I keep saying this, but this year has given me the opportunity to just prepare for things, whether it's a round or a show or whatever. So I'm already pretty much locked in for tonight.
You're a professional.
I'm excited, man. I miss playing music so much. I've had to, it's like having to learn how to have your favorite thing in the world taken away from you. And something that, you know, I worked 10 years every day relentlessly to be able to be a good entertainer. And that's been something we've had to learn to live without a little bit this year. So to get to go play tonight, it's just, I'm very excited.
Teddy Robb at the Listening Room. This is going to be a great show.
Are you coming?
I don't know. Maybe.
Let me know. If you want to come, you're invited. I'll get you in.
Well, get me. I haven't gone to the Listening Room yet since they've opened up, because I'm very COVID nervous. I'm convinced I'm going to get it. I'm a hypochondriac on a good day. I think I'm going to get it. So I've been avoiding the Listening Room, but there's been some tempting nights that I've thought about going. And everyone's telling me I got to go. Maybe I'll come.
Well, I don't want to be the one that tells you and then get COVID.
Yeah, you'd feel horrible if I got COVID after that. But maybe I'll come. Listening Room tonight. I haven't seen a show. I'm trying to think if I've seen anything No, I haven't seen a show during this entire pandemic.
Yeah.
The last show I saw was Sky McCreary at the Ryman Auditorium.
Wow. Well, you like a healthy guy. You know, it's definitely
I'm very unhealthy.
No, oh, yeah? You didn't strike me as that. But, I just think that it's definitely something to take precautions and everything. But there's, you know, there is just some.
How many people are in the listening room when you play these shows? Like, is it half empty, half full? Like what's happening?
That's what they're saying is it's, at half capacity. So I don't know how many people fit in the listening room, but maybe 75, 100. Like
half capacity.
Yeah, it might be 150 normal, and it's somewhere around there. But it's like it feels good. It feels like it's a show. There's people there. Everyone's just kind of spread out.
This is look. Well, I'm gonna think about it. I'm gonna consider it.
Think about it. If you want to come, we'll get you in. But if you get COVID, it's not my fault.
I have to sign a waiver beforehand. Did you watch any of the election coverage last night? By the time this comes out, we'll probably know who won. But were you following any of it, or were you like, I'm tuning this out? I can't deal.
I followed a little bit, but you know, had some other things on my mind. I was having a pretty fun night. So we tuned in, and man, I just, whatever happens, I'm personally, I don't want to lose sleep either way. I know it's a really important election, and you know, I don't want to lose friends either way. I respect everyone's opinion, and you know, have my own beliefs, and I'm just, I'm ready to get through it, honestly, whatever that may be, and take steps to get back to living a little bit more normal of a life.
You're having a fun night last night. What's that mean? Hanging out with friends, or what's going on last night? good times?
Yeah, it was a good night. Had maybe a little bit of wine, you know, just prepping for tonight, you know?
Prepping for tonight, the listening room. Teddy Robb playing the listening room tonight. I'm bummed that by the time this comes out, the event will be over. No one will be able to go who listens to this. It's going to be packed, though. They're selling these things out. This is everybody's coming to the listening room. It's going to be a great night. Teddy Robb, we've said it all. What's been unsaid? Have we said it all?
I think we got everything.
This is your chance. What do we need to plug? We've got the radio single. You've got to listen to this thing. Heaven on Dirt. This is out now. You're going to hear it on the radio, but check this thing out on Spotify, because this is a great song, and I want you to listen to this. I want you to picture Teddy at a bar in Vail singing his songs. He's climbing mountains. He's snowboarding. And this song could have been in his headphones while he was – this could be the soundtrack to Teddy Robb's time in Vail, Colorado. I just want you to picture that. Young Teddy Robb in Colorado as you're listening to Heaven on Dirt. He's tearing it up. Teddy, thanks for coming on. This has been a blast.
Thank you for having me, man. And I hope we get to hang soon when all this does settle. Seriously, no pressure to come tonight. when everything settles, I can't wait to hang. Maybe we play some guitars, whatever it may be. I've really enjoyed today.
Absolutely. We'll break the guitars out. I've got a great telly over here. The Nash stuff, the Nash guitars are awesome.
You'll have to play it, man. It's a dream.
That just looks classic. That is a classic, which is what he does really well. He just makes classic looking tellies. The neck is worn. Look at that neck, Scott. Feel incredible.
It does. They come like this too. Like, that's not for me.
Right. Yeah. That's fantastic. Teddy, stay well. Crush the listening room tonight. And we'll see you on the other side.
See you, man. Thanks.
There you have it. Thanks for tuning in. And thanks again to Teddy for taking the time to come on to the show. And by the way, in case you're wondering, I did not make it to the listening room. I know I should have gone, but COVID, it's a global pandemic. I chickened out. I didn't go. I'm sorry. Invite me next time, Teddy. I would love to be there next time. Doing the best I can here. Okay, that's enough. The Zach Kuhn Show is mixed by Sam Heyman, and our theme music is by Justin Johnson. If you want more content from us, you can subscribe to my newsletter at NashvilleBriefing.com, or you can follow us on socials, everything at Nashville Briefing. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Bye.